Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 21, Text 32. This verse is the last of the verses spoken by Lord Vishnu to Kardama Muni. So we'll just get the context. Kardama Muni was one of the direct sons of Lord Brahma. This is the very, very beginning of creation. Not just the day of Brahma, but the life of Brahma. And the earlier chapters have described his creation of the universe, and now he's populating the universe. He's doing that through his sons. And the first of the sons to receive this instruction to help create population within the universe is Kardama. So Kardama goes to the forest to qualify himself, prepare himself to produce good praja. It's Satya Yuga, so he's engaged in the process of meditation. But the object of his meditation is the personality of Godhead, very similar to Dhruva Maharaj. And his austerities are such, so ardent and strong and long, that the personality of Godhead comes into the forest, literally standing on the back of Garuda, the wings of Garuda moving, Lord Vishnu smiling, Kardama stunned, Kardama pays obeisances and offers beautiful prayers, then the Lord speaks to him. This is that section. He describes how he was pleased by Kardama's devotion, and therefore he's come. He says to Kardama that, "I understand your intention and your heart and your desire, and I will fulfill your heart's desire." Prabhupada comments, the devotee's desires never left unattended to by the personality of Godhead. So the Lord then says, without indicating specifically what his desire is twofold. He wants to fulfill the instruction of Brahma to produce offspring, and his other desire is in parental affection, have as a son the personality of Godhead, because Kardama is an exceptional devotee. So the Lord says, "I'll fulfill your desire." That means a wife will be provided, suitable wife. Specifically, he says, a wife that is of the quality like you. And his quality is that of pure devotion, and so her quality will similarly be of pure devotion. He then describes, in 2 days' time, at his very location, in the deep darkness of the forest, Swayambhuva Manu is going to come along with his wife, and they're going to make a proposal for you're marrying their daughter, so you should say yes, because she's very qualified. And together you will produce 9 daughters, and these daughters will then be given to my other sons, so they can continue the process of creating offspring. And in addition, I will appear as your son. He says some very wonderful things. I'll just read. With your heart cleansed by properly carrying out my command, resigning to me the fruits of all your acts, you will finally attain me. This is a very nice description. I've already discussed these verses, but it's a description of dovetail, or connecting material desire with the interest of the Supreme Lord, dedicating even the activities of material interest, because his interest is material. He wants a wife, he wants children, it's material, but dedicating fully to the personality of Godhead, exclusively in his service, one will become purified, and you'll attain me. And then, in that stage of attaining me, the next verse, text 31, says, showing compassion to all living entities, you will attain self-realization. So part of committing oneself and one's desires to the Lord's service includes compassion, like, you know, how you interact with others. Giving assurance of safety to all, you will perceive your own self as well as all the universes in me and myself in you. So that's a long purport, very deep subject matter. And then here, this verse this morning is the last of what Lord Vishnu says to Karnama. So he says, he's already introduced that Devahuti will become his wife, that there will be daughters. Now he's going to say, text 32, Sahaham Svangsha Kavaya Tvad Viryena Mahamune Tava Kshetre Devahutyam Praneshe Tatva Samhitam. Translation. O great sage, so this is Vishnu speaking to Kardama. O great sage, I shall manifest my own plenary portion through your wife Devahuti, along with your 9 daughters, and I shall instruct her in the system of philosophy that deals with the ultimate principles or categories. So it's tattva samhitam, the philosophy that deals with the ultimate principles or categories, tattva. There's two parts to the message in the purport. What's Sankhya philosophy and what's a Svangsa Kala? So, herein the word Svangsa Kalaya indicates that the Lord would appear as the son of Devahuti and Kardamamuni, as Kapiladev, the first propounder of the Sankhya philosophy, which is mentioned here as Tattva Samhita. But Samhita, Prabhupada, is sometimes translated as hymns. There's like Brahma Samhita, prayers or hymns. And Tattva, like Jiva Tattva, Vishnu Tattva, Shiva Tattva, Shakti Tattva. Tattva means truths or categories, and in different divisions. So Tattva Samhita, it's Sankhya philosophy. Matter and spirit, and the divisions of them, the categories of spirit. In fact, that's part of what's being discussed later in the purport. There's Svangsa Kalaya is specific. There's, well, I'll read. There's Svangsa and Devinansa. Svangsa means Krishna or Vishnu Tattva, and Devinansa means the living entity or Jiva Tattva. So that's a distinction between categories of spirit. There's in the discussion between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami, it gets really detailed and really, really technical. Tadekatma Rupa and Vilas and Prakash, and it's like, it makes your head spin. There's so many different terms. But there are categories of Krishna's expansions, and some that do this and some do that. Very, very detailed. The system of analysis makes your head spin. Make my head spin. Similarly, Rupa Goswami has written a book, Laghu Bhagavatamrita, just as Sanatan Goswami has written Brihat Bhagavatamrita. We're familiar with that. It's been translated by and published by the BDT. So Brihat means great. So Rupa Goswami, taking the humble position before his brother, called his book Laghu, means light. Big and light. So Laghu Bhagavatamrita is very detailed, in a very detailed way, describing the forms of Krishna. And he does it four different ways. Like, first one way, A to Z, and then another way, A to Z, and then another way, A to Z, another way. It's very comprehensive. Initially starts with, as they appear in chapter 3 of Canto 1, the forms of the Lord. Because that was a question by the sages. So it's like a commentary on that chapter of sorts. And then he goes through, and then he takes another division of the forms of the Lord according to their six types. But then he takes those six types and creates subdivisions of those six types, and then gives examples of each of the subtypes of the six types, and gives some little detail about the personalities, the forms of the Lord. And then he does another system, it's like in short, what I'm indicating here is we're getting just a very simple explanation that Vishnu is saying to Kardama that I will appear as your son, but don't mistake me as a jiva, Vibhinaksa. It's going to be me, a svangsa, plenary. I'll read the second paragraph. There are different manifestations of the Lord. He is one. But he has become many. He divides himself into two different expansions. One called Kala and the other Vibhinaksha. Ordinary living entities are called Vibhinaksha expansions. And the unlimited expansions of Vishnu Tattva, such as Vamana Govinda, Narayana, Pradyumna, Vasudev, and Ananta, are called Svangsha Kala. But now it gets a little more technical. Svangsha refers to a direct expansion, and Kala denotes an expansion from the expansion of the original Lord. Gives an example. Baladev is an expansion of Krishna, so Svangsha. And from Baladev, the next expansion is Sankarsana. Thus, Sankarsana is Kala, but Baladev is Svangsha. Such as definition of terms. Definition of terms. For the purpose of the verse, explicitly, the Lord Vishnu is telling Kardama, Svangsa Kalaya, I'll appear not as a living entity expanded from me, but as myself, as your son. And then Prabhupada goes back the other way to say, although there are the differentiating Svangsa from Kala, you know, we're familiar with this language in Prabhupada's writing, consistent with what he's saying here, a portion of a plenary portion, which when you, at least when I read that so many hundreds of times, I didn't understand what he was trying to convey, a portion of a plenary portion. And it's just to indicate a category. Svangsa and Kala. Direct expansion and expansion of the direct expansion. So there's so many Kalas, but you know, from our, we just observed Balaram's appearance day recently, we say he is non different from Krishna except color. Svangsa. And then from Balaram expands Sankarshan. So he's Kala. Or Svangsa Kala. And then Sankarshan expands. Actually, Krishna expands as Vasudev. Sankarshan then expands as Pradyumna and Aniruddha. So now we have the Chaturvyuha in Krishna Loka, and then that Sankarshan of Krishna Loka expands as the Sankarsana Vaikuntha. And he is commonly referred to, not always, but commonly referred to as Maha Sankarsan, although one might wonder why Maha in Vaikuntha, but Maha Sankarsan. And then the other chatra view are expanded, and from that same Maha Sankarsan, because he likes to serve Krishna, he expands the Purusha avatars. So the Purusha avatars are called Kala. The Chatravyuha Vaikuntha are called Kala. Narayana Vaikuntha is called Kala. And there's one that's Swangsa. There are two, Krishna and Balaram. Krishna is the original and Balaram is the expansion. He's, at least, it's not always 100% consistent like that, but that's the message we're getting here. So it's Swangsa Kala. Then Prabhupada goes in reverse to say, however, there is no difference among them. This is very nicely explained in Brahma Samhita 5.46. Departure eva hitasham taram abhyupetya. That's all he gives. And with one candle, one may light a second candle. With the second, a third, and then a fourth, and in this way one can light up thousands of candles. And no candle is inferior to another in distributing light. Or the potency is the same. Every candle has the full potential candle power. But there is still the distinction that one candle is the first, another the second, another the third, and another the fourth. Similarly, there's no difference between the immediate expansion of the Lord and his secondary expansion. So, Sankarsan and Balaram are used interchangeably. One refers to the other refers to the one, it's the same. But there's some distinction. So that's like this Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, everything. So everything, not just matter and Krishna and the living entity in Krishna, and it's even the expansions of Krishna and Krishna. There's simultaneous oneness and difference. The way in which there's difference is different. And the way in which there's oneness is the same. The same in that they're all expansions of Krishna. There's nothing but Krishna. And at the same time, everything is different from Krishna. In the simple sense that Krishna is the source and not everything is the source. Everything is the expansion of the source. Okay, so, the Lord's names are considered in exactly the same way. Semicolon. Since the Lord is absolute, his name, his form, his pastimes, his paraphernalia, and his quality all have the same potency. That the sameness, in one sense, is potency, like the candles, same potency. While there's difference, this is the first one, that's the second one, and so forth. In the absolute world, the name Krishna is the transcendental sound representation of the Lord. There is no potential difference between his quality, name, form, etc. If we chant the name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, that has as much potency as the Lord himself. There is no potential difference between the form of the Lord whom we worship and the form of the Lord in the temple. One should not think that one is worshiping a doll or statue of the Lord. even if others consider it to be a statue. Because there is no potential difference, one gets the same result by worshipping the statue of the Lord or the Lord himself. This is the science of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada also discusses the distinction between Devahuti Putra Kapila, the son of Devahuti, who spoke Sankhya philosophy, and the more recent, and at least amongst Mayavadis and speculative scholars, more well known is the more recent modern Kapila, who was an atheist, and he propounded Sankhya philosophy with an atheistic perspective. And so that's what, at least for our edification, that's what most people know is Sankhya, and that's what most people know who Kapila is, and Prabhupada wants us to know. That's not what's being referred to here. It's not that fellow. It's the personality of Godhead who appeared in the forest with Karma Muni and Mary Devahuti, and then spoke Sankhya philosophy to Devahuti. And besides, there are two different personalities. The teaching is the conclusion of the teachings of Sankhya are quite different. One is devotion, and the other is impersonal, Brahman. The modern Kapila Dev was an atheist. Like, you know, pretty hardcore atheist. Atheistic philosophy. And moderns, there are modern scientists that study the Vedas, and they like this modern Kapila. Because it, you know, as far as they're concerned, it explains how everything fits together and there's no God. But Kapila Dev, the conclusion, although it's Sankhya, it's analysis of matter and spirit, but both matter and spirit rest upon the Supreme Spirit. And that Supreme Spirit is a person. And by understanding the divisions of matter properly and dedicating them in proper service to the Supreme, then one can realize the Supreme. It is, just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that he's only understood through devotional service. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavanyasyasmi tatvataha. I'm understood in truth only by devotional service. So, the goal of one is godlessness, and the goal of Kapila spoken up here, the outcome is realization of God, or the goal, awakening love of God, through the medium of devotional service. I thought I would spend a little bit of time, because it's the scriptural reference that Prabhupada gives in the purport here, to understand how it works, to understand the expansions of the Supreme Lord, because he's dedicated this long paragraph to the oneness and difference between the expansions. And so from the Brahma Samhita verse, the key phrase is Archi. Of course, there's a common name in the West, which is a man's name or boy's name, Archi. But in Sanskrit, it means something. In Sanskrit, one meaning is light, but the meaning that's taken in Brahma Samhita, it's flame, because intrinsic qualities of fire are heat and light. Well, commonly archi is used in Sanskrit to mean light. But it's flame. So Deepa, you know, from Diwali or Deepavali, it's a lamp. But the lamp has light or flame. So that the flame, the departure is the flame of the lamp. And what's being said is it's the flame of the lamp that's transferred to another lamp. So the lamp, there's a whole bunch of lamps, or like, you know, what we may use candles or little clay cup with some ghee wick inside. So that's the lamp, and then it gets lit. So the fire is transferred from one fire to another fire to another fire to another. So from unlit to now lit. That's the flame that's being transferred. And when you have all the lamps with the flame lit set up, they give off the same illumination, the same exact, same potency. So you walk into the room with all the lamps lit, you can't tell the difference between which lamp was the one from which the others were lit and which were the ones that were lit from it. They're all giving off the same illumination. Similarly, the Vedic picture of so many incarnations of the Lord that are of the category of Vishnu Tattva, which one is original? And the original, whatever that is, or whoever that is, that's the absolute truth from whom all the other expansions of the absolute truth have come. And we don't know because we're just walking into the room that's filled with lamps, which is the original lamp. The Bhagavatam is indicating Krishna is that original, and the others are his expansions. So for some people that's interesting technical information, but who cares? They're all God. In one sense that's nice, okay, they're all God, so worship God. As long as there's now a clear distinction between God and the Vibhinaksha, the living entities. So in this case, Kapila is an expansion of the expansion. He's worshipable, different than a living entity. So, departure eva, he, dasha antarantam, dasha antarantam means another lamp. So the lamp of the flame of the lamp creates another lamp, another flame of another lamp. The flame is transferred. Avyupetya, it's expanded. So it's more fire, more flame. But more flame from the original flame. Dipayate, again there's Deepa, the lamp. Dipayate, there's, in addition to the flame, there's light. So it illuminates. Vivrita hetu is important. Hetu means cause. So the original, that's Govinda, because that's what the conclusion is. He is the original from which, the light of which illuminates other lamps, and it expands the illumination, although it's originally just one. And along with, this is important, along with the expansion, the cause is included. That's what this vivritta hetu means. It's like the Vedic conception that the Son is the representative of the Father. Now, the Son is different than the Father. Take a look. But from Vedic conception, the Son is the representative of the Father, and therefore the Son may be, well, in so many ways, the Son may be sent on some occasion to that where the Father is unable to attend to represent the Son. Or the Son inherits the property of the Father. And the Son inherits the debts of the Father too. There have been court cases about it, where the Son is held responsible for the debts of his Father, just because that's law. So, although the Son is not the Father, he's the representative of the Father. Like this wonderful pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where King Prataparudra wanted to have Lord Chaitanya's association. Lord Chaitanya refused after some discussions. The son of the king was sent. Lord Chaitanya associated with the son of the king, but not the king. So it was like associating with the king, but not associating with the king. So oneness and difference. Similarly, where these expansions are there, the cause is included in the expansion. Just as the flame is included, the cause is included in the expansion. Although it's not the cause. The expansion is caused. But the causal principle is there within the expansion. That's what's being said in Brahma Samhita. And samana dharma, equally powerful. Yas tadrig eva hicha vishnu taya vibhati. So the emphasis here is going to Vishnu Taya, the expansion as Lord Vishnu. So here's Govinda. He expands as Baladev, Swamsa, and then Swamsa expands to Kala, Sankarshan. Sankarshan expands as Mahasankarshan, who expands as Lord Vishnu. So by these expansions of Lord Vishnu, Vibhati, illumination is spread. The whole of creation takes place. The material creation takes place. But it's all resting on Govinda. So both the flame is passed, and the causal principle is passed. That is, the rest, the primordial rest of all things is within the expansions. And therefore, they're equal. And at the same time, they're different. Prabhupada went over that so many times. It's so many times. It's worth going over it again. So it's clear, because otherwise we can be confused, or people that are confused could confuse us, unless you're clear. And we certainly make a distinction, as Krishna makes distinction in Bhagavad Gita, of the position of the devatas. Now some people don't like that. Or some people that are becoming attracted to Krishna consciousness have their, they have their affinity towards what they did before Krishna consciousness. And then how do they address that which they did before Krishna consciousness once they're starting to take up Krishna consciousness? I've had 4 discussions in the past week about, from people that are in that situation. It's not at all uncommon. So it's all the more reason why, or here's another reason why it's important to understand the principle of the absolute truth. within the absolute truth is everything. So some persons are feeling, well, I like Krishna, but I did all these things, and what should I do about all these things that I used to do? I mean, can I continue doing these things I used to do and worship Krishna too? And it's like, well, that's a no-no, but it's already there. Because within Krishna is everything. So you're not neglecting or disregarding or being offensive to. So one of the things I got recently was I understand that, but you know, since childhood, the way that my mother addressed us and my grandmother addressed my mother and us was, we said a certain phrase, worshipping or respecting a certain aspect of the absolute truth, and so what am I supposed to do? Because I feel drawn to do that and continue that. However you want to handle it, eventually understand, just by the sound vibration, Hare Krishna, it's included. I just spent a half an hour going through the whole thing. If you have $1 million, you have $10. And $100, and $1,000, and $100,000. You have all amounts of dollars. So it's not missing, it's already there. It's Hare Krishna. Now that's maybe a matter of faith, or it's a matter of knowledge and faith combined. But it's already there. So at least from the point of view of offense, there's no offense. You're not being disrespectful to some practice that you did sometime. Anyway. Lord Kapila Dev is Svangsa Kala. He's not a living entity that appeared in recent times and taught the atheistic philosophy. He's the personality of Godhead, who's very mercifully telling a jiva, I will appear as the son of yourself and your wife who you're not even married to yet. And sure enough, 2 days later, Sarvabhauma appeared with his wife, Shatarupa. Jesus says, everything as... So how did Lord Vishnu know things that haven't happened yet, what's going to happen? That's a whole other discussion. Does that mean that there isn't really free will, it's just everything is predestined? And you know that one. And the answer is no. Omniscience on the part of the Supreme Lord doesn't preclude free will. This very quickly, because that can be a big, long topic too. But one of the ways that helps persons understand is, supposing their events right now is going different phases of time. Now, you know something now, like Guru Govinda's in his father's arms. Does that preclude free will of the child and his father? Or go back in time. And if you know something that happened back in time, does it preclude the free will of the persons who did those things? Now we'll go forward in time. And if one had the capacity to know as one knows today, this moment and the past, and had similar capacity in time, doesn't mean there's free will is not operative. if someone jumped out of the second floor window and I said, they're going to hit the grass out here, the lawn. Oh, that means he doesn't have free will. And that's just like knowing the law of gravity or the laws of nature. So what to speak of persons that have more knowledge than just the laws of nature? It doesn't preclude free will. Free will is always operative, and knowing things in these three phases of time doesn't preclude free will. Anyway, he does make his free will choices. He could say, no, I'm not going to marry Devahuti. That's it. The story doesn't unfold. But he's a devotee and he follows the indication of the Supreme Lord. Okay, so any comments or discussion? Yes?
Two or three questions.
Two or three?
Okay. On that, what we have been doing in the past, like people, they have been worshipping demigods and now they get introduced to Krishna consciousness. So when we tell them that Krishna includes everything, sometimes they say that, well, using the help of the demigods, I have come to this platform. So how can I stop worshipping them? Or sometimes they take it as pride.
You want to elaborate on the second one? The pride one?
That you are being proud. Oh. That you are, say, don't worship the demigods.
Okay. The first one, I would refer them to the purport of 529 Bhagavad Gita. The last verse of chapter 6, where the Bhajatimam Anant, yes. Shadhavan Bhajateyomam. So, in that purport, the first paragraph describes the word bhaj as appropriate for the personality of God in rendering him service, and Prabhupada explains that respect should go to everyone. But devotional service is meant for the personality of Godhead. So, the distinction here is devotional service goes to the personality of Godhead while respecting an ant or others or a demigod. Proportionate to the position, fine. We don't respect an ant the same way we respect a demigod. But it's different than devotional service. On the topmost plane, it depends on the person, but on the topmost, how you would explain, on the topmost plane, in the spiritual realm, there are digpals, they're protectors of the Dham, which are prototype demigods that are making sure that unqualified people don't enter. And then the residential places of the various prototype demigods, according to the Bhagavatam, they're the layers of the universe. And then there's demigods within the universe who administer the affairs of the universe. So we respect those persons who are administering the affairs of the universe. They're supplying, just like we respect our parents, because they're taking care of the necessities for us, in our position as dependents. And it's not that now that I'm adult, now I don't give a hoot for my parents. I receive so much from them and I continue to respect them in that way. But they're not the worshipable Supreme Lord. My third great teacher, I receive something from her. And I respect her for that which I received from her. But she's not the worshipable Supreme Lord. And then you, go up the scale. So we respect them. But our devotion goes to the personality of Godhead. Those who have helped us achieve that, we respect them. And they will be very happy when they see that we've achieved the fruit of what they've given us. They're not going to be unhappy. They'll be happy. So we don't disrespect. We respect. And we worship the personality of Godhead. Now that's a more mature understanding than one might have had when one just, has a third grade teacher or parents or worships demigods. It's a mature understanding. It's the bigger picture of the whole of advanced civilization. The Aryan position is one who understands the purpose behind each of the things of life that we're to continue to respect even when we grow up. We don't disrespect, we appreciate. They've helped us to this stage, that stage, that stage, and now what's the ultimate stage? And then as far as pride, it's not, it's certainly someone can be, someone who has knowledge can be proud. Certainly a possibility. And if one's heart isn't pure, and one has something of value, one can be proud. But the statement that's being made from the scripture is not from the position of pride. There may be pride in an imperfect being's heart like me and others like me. But the statement is, the statement that comes from Krishna is not out of pride. And his indication is exclusively one should worship him. But here's why, and then so it's based on knowledge. So the statement coming from Krishna is not based in pride. And as my heart becomes, as a Vaishnava, as an aspiring Vaishnava, may my heart become free from pride. So I can say these things without any position of pride, like Krishna. And, they may say so many things after that. Something that may help them is, let's take a few steps back and just ask you, how do you regard Bhagavad Gita? And do you accept it as truth, as scripture? An understanding, a light by which we should lead our lives? And most people will say yes. And then it's just connect the dots. And then there's the picture after you connect the dots. On the authority of Bhagavad Gita. It's not me. It's, the authority of Bhagavad Gita, which you accept and I accept. So that's our common point of reference. And here's what's said. And there's no pride over there. Something else? Yes. You had a few.
I also remember.
We'll come back. Huh?
You already addressed this question in the lecture. Still, I wanted to ask. There was a question raised in Bhaktivinoda why do I need to know these technical details? What difference does it make to me? You already addressed this, but still, I would like to know if there's more we can add to that.
I don't think I need to. Simple. You've heard me say this one many times. It's something that is very simple and profound. Prabhupada said, when a goal is clearly defined, it is easy to make steps to reach the goal. And the converse is also true. If the goal is not clearly defined, it's very difficult. So we're in this like very tiny position, trying to understand what's the goal. And so from our tiny position, it may, from us, from our vantage point, look like something complicated and technical and irrelevant. And we should just like do devotional service and chant and be happy, and you know, why all this clearly defining the goal stuff? Well, part of the confusion of the lives of people in this age of Kali is they don't know what the goal is. They're doing something without knowing what the goal is. And it's stated in scripture that even doing the right thing without understanding the purpose of the right thing, one is not going to achieve the full fruit of that something. Well, one must also understand the purpose, and the purpose is to reach the goal, and what's the goal? So it's to help guide us as we move along the path of spiritual development to know what's what. Like, so for starters, what the goal is, and then what the goal isn't, helps us understand what the goal is. You'll take another one of your questions, and then another one from her, and come back again. Go ahead.
The other one was a little more technical. So all expansions are from Sankarsana. Do Vasudev, Pradyumna and Aniruddha also expand? Because sometimes you refer to Krishna in...
Vasudev is an expansion of Krishna. And Sankarsana is an expansion of Balaram. Vasudev and Sankarsana in Goloka. There is described in Brahma Samhita, they reside... The residential place is in Svetadvipa, which is surrounding Gokula, where is the abode, the residential place of Radha and Krishna and their immediate associates. Goloka or Gokula. And then there's the area around them, and that's part of the Goloka Vrindavan planet, where Svetadvipa is also there. And Vasudev, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha have their residential places. And there, that indicates Mathura and Dwarka. They're in that Svetadvipa region. Without specifying it in Sri Brahma Samhita, that's where they are. So Vasudev Krishna is in Mathura. And Vasudev Krishna is in Dwarka. And Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is in Vrindavan. And it's all part of the spiritual realm, Goloka. Okay?
So the conception of the absolute truth, right? Like you were explaining about Swamsa and Kala and Vrindavansha and all that. So our understanding in Krishna consciousness is that, and you also mentioned that when we, on the strength of devotion, it's, the realizations come. God realization includes understanding all this, and we also understand our own selves better.
Yes.
So, and what makes that happen is the mercy, the descending mercy of Krishna that gives us that understanding about ourselves.
Yes.
So my question was, there is this, understanding that the cause is included in the expansion. So there is some idea about this in the world, and many times I have heard, like, people just say, who are pursuing some kind of a path of self-awareness or something like that, they say that,
God is within everything.
God is within everything. And so if I'm just pursuing my own self-awareness, I'll get there. I'll get to God anyway. So I was trying to understand from this authoritative, the scriptures is, so in that sense, Krishna is not explicitly in the picture. It's just about, I'm just working, on self-awareness, and if I'm a part of God, and what I realize is I'm realizing God, something like that.
Okay.
So I was just, I needed some more
sure.
clarification about that.
I wasn't very satisfied with the attempt on Janmashtami evening to express this, because I saw those two interfaith ladies sitting in the front with their garlands. God is within everything. But the fullness of God, while God is within everything, as the light of the sun is within the Suryakant stone, portion of the light of the sun. So it's luminous, but it's a portion of the light of the sun. Not even like you have to hold it in the sun and then it glitters. It glows just on its own. And that sun is an expansion of Krishna's energy, so Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaha Vajami. So one can realize the presence of God within the Suryakant stone through the light, that's the luminous nature of that Suryakant stone. It's like, you can say, it's mystical. But that's not complete. So that's appreciating the presence of God within the stone. Or the presence of God within nature. It's common. And I've experienced it when you're in a just this raw, awesome power feature of nature. You feel the presence of God. Like I met somebody who's from Chicago, and they're now living in Phoenix. And it's a nice lady who said, when I met her, I used to live in Chicago and I got this inspiration from God that I could find God in the desert. So I moved to Arizona. And you can find God in the desert. There's I don't know exactly what that meant to her, but to some persons it might mean the mightiness of God, or literally, personal feature of God. There are degrees of realization. Of the vibhutis can give one the sense of the presence of God. Krishna advocates that. But that's not the full extent of the ability to realize God. So keep going, keep going, keep going. Now, back to the frame of your question, the persons who speak like that, is it possible that they can come to the stage one day of realizing Swayam Bhagavan Krishna? And the answer is, it's possible one receives the mercy of a devotee who has that understanding. That's how the understanding comes, for such realizations, or the more complete phases of realization. Because it's only through devotional service that one can understand Krishna in fullness. He says that. And where does that devotional service come from? It comes from one who's carrying bhakti, who received it from one who's carrying bhakti, and so forth. But that's the means. It's not the ascending, it's descending. And it's ascending specific, it's ascending through parampara. Then one can realize in fullness, or as far as living entity has the capacity to realize the personality of Godhead. So there's respect for the search for God. There's a whole book like this thick, Search for Truth, Bhaktisiddhanta. And he expresses these things. It's so when someone gets, they get a connection with a truth, they find it in nature, or they find it in whatever it is they find it in. It's a power, a mightiness, an almightiness that's beyond anything material, and that convinces them, I have the means to reach the truth. I have to reach God. I feel it. It's, you know, experiential. So there's not denying that by any means. It's encourage that by all means. At the same time, encourage hearing through authoritative sources, or hear through a teacher. Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancha Trikipitim Vina, a verse from Rupa Goswami. Utpataya Vakalpate. Without such reference, it can take one away from the personality of Godhead, or realization of it, limit one from realization of the personality of Godhead. So such a person should, by good fortune, meet a devotee and then receive the devotion of the devotee and take additional steps.
So the realization about Krishna means also realizing our relationship. So for people like that, there is some realization of who they are, but it's not complete because that relationship
that's
with Krishna is not
complete. So let's go like really high. Beyond like the presence of God, I feel the presence of God, to Brahman realization. All of this is temporary illusion, and who I am and who you are and all and reality is Brahman. And that's like that's a very profound spiritual feeling. Brahmananda. That's also not complete, because you know what you said, that the Brahman has as its foundation Bhagavan, described in Bhagavad Gita. But if I don't have that Bhagavad Gita presence, and I may even have an impersonal, you know, rendering of Bhagavad Gita and say something, you know, that says something else to me, it's not complete. Although it's legitimate, Brahman realization is a legitimate spiritual realization and profound, but not complete.
Mentioned departure, that the one candle lights up other candles and they're all having the same flame. At the same time, we also know that only Krishna has all the qualities in full. So how do I understand these seeming two contradictory statements?
Only Krishna has all qualities in full. Because so the potency, the potential, or the potency of each of the expansions of Krishna are there. But Krishna is the source. That's one difference. And we know from Nectar Devotion, there are four qualities that Krishna has that Vishnu forms don't have. So everything is there in Krishna, while the potential that's passed on to his expansions is there in his expansions. The 60 qualities that are there in Lord Vishnu are also there in Krishna. We can also say they're Bhagavan. they have all opulence as in full. And yet Krishna has unique qualities.
So two questions. First question is earlier, we said that we talked about respecting the parents and demigods. I was thinking that when I was growing up...
And if you're a great teacher. And whoever you've received help from, we respect whoever it is. We're indebted. That's what Scripture says. We're indebted. You know, you're born and you're indebted. You're a debtor. And it's irresponsible to say, oh, I don't have any debts anymore. I just decided.
But
the debt is fulfilled by worship of the personality of Godhead. Go ahead.
Part of when I was growing up was respecting your parents meant obeying them. There was no concept of respectfully disagreeing with my parents.
Okay.
I don't think there's still that. I'm not saying my parents or the demigods are saying not to worship Krishna, not to perform devotional service to Krishna. But then when I think about respecting my parents or the demigods, what exactly am I meaning? Or when explaining it to others, what am I saying to them? This is how you express your respect. Is it just carrying gratitude in our heart? Is that respect?
That's one. But it may take other forms. But those other forms should be subordinate to, now that you have received bhakti and the knowledge of devotional service, those expressions of gratitude and whatever other forms they may take are in pursuance of a higher principle. Pleasing Krishna. That's important because supposing there's some expectation from parents that's a disconnect with what's pleasing to Krishna. So that's where it's respectfully disagreeing. Because this principle is higher than that principle. This principle, the respecting of others is subordinate to the higher principle. That's the Sarvadharma verse. They're still there. The subordinate ones are still there, but they are subordinate. And it's a principle of deciding what to do in life is there are conflicting things. And we're supposed to do this and supposed to do that and supposed to not do this and supposed to not do that, and it gets complex. Especially if you're conscientious, it gets complex. You can just be in ignorance, it doesn't, it's not complex at all. But they are subordinate to the higher principle. So it's just I'm giving a qualified answer to your question or to your suggestion. Yes, gratitude and maybe so many other things. I'm sure there's some other things that you do besides just feel and express gratitude. It's various other things.
Sometimes when it comes out or when it's suggested to come up, it may be in the form of recommending ritualistic services to demigods.
That's parents' respect asking of you. So if you want to know, how do you handle that while you're still having respect for your parents, is that what the question is?
Two parts. First part is that. The second part is when I talk to others, like what Prabhu was saying, when I talk to others and they say, I still want to express their gratitude, and they say, I tell them, respect the demigods or respect whoever got you to this platform, what exactly am I saying?
Well, how do you best respect the demigods, or how do you best respect your parents who helped you get to the stage of, by whatever it was that they gave you, along with the association of devotees that helped you say yes when that opportunity came and you continued. It's, you know, one of the best ways to express gratitude is become everything that your life can become. And that's an expression of gratitude. In and of itself, without even saying doing anything else. And then when you do have, you know, even if you don't have it, you know, like, you know, on the other side of the planet, or they're departed, you're continuing to grow in devotional service is the best service that you can do. And if there are discussions, depending upon receptivity, then you can explain what I just, you know, shared a little bit about, explaining to somebody who is worshipping other than Krishna exclusively. No, they may not have the capacity to understand. They may take offense, so you don't explain, because, you know, externally they'll misunderstand and be insulted. You're smarter than your parents. What kind of son are you? Smarty pants. You're proud. So you don't explain, because that's how they might react. I didn't even try with my parents. I just continued, and, you know, they're deceased now, they didn't exactly understand what's going on, other than, you know, I'm really dedicated to something. And that's genuine. And they respected that. So, and I was doing the best expression of gratitude for all. And I, you know, I felt it, and to this day I feel it. There's gratitude for how they helped me. The form of the expression wasn't as they would have wanted, because of the training and the understanding that I received from Prabhupada. What's the best way I can be of service to them?
Something in relation to what you asked, there was a discussion I was having with the devotee. If you can't love others, you cannot love Krishna. And I still don't understand how to love others. What does love really mean, loving others?
Well, I'm glad I don't know the person and the context, because I can comment without any reference to the person or the context. First things first. Try to love others first, and it's not possible. With love of Krishna, then it's possible to love others. Meaning so that the loving of others is a subset of the one. Now, there's a pathway to get to love of Krishna, and that's loving others, then I can get to the stage of loving Krishna. It's not what Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita. And it's not what Christ taught in the Bible. It's the first one, followed by the second one. How can I possibly know, even myself, what to speak of others without devotion to Krishna? I can't possibly love others. It's going to be sentiment that's mixed with selfish interest called love. I have a feeling for another person. I like the other person. I make sacrifices for the other person. And I feel happiness called love in that. That's not what love is. It's nice. It's certainly better than, you know, going the other direction. But it's not what love is. Read, if you want to understand it better, I suggest you read those two verses in Queen Kunti's prayers where she requests Krishna to take away her affection for the Pandavas and Krishnas and make her love exclusive upon him. In the purport it explains how to have a loving relationship jiva to jiva is possible when that love from jiva to jiva is subordinated to and based upon love for the Supreme. Then you can have spiritual love jiva to jiva. And without it, you can't. You have attachment and affinity and feelings that we call love, based upon illusion.
And I fully agree to what you said, Maharaj, and that was my comment also. But on the other hand, for our own children, we have some sense of feeling. I don't know whether
natural. It's natural. It's, you know, it's completely saturated with material energy. But step back in time and where were you before the child? And where was the child before they were your child? And where was the affinity for them then? But that's okay, by divine arrangement, here's your children. And there's affinity for them. And it's natural, completely natural. If we wouldn't have wholesome children if we didn't have that affinity from parents for the children. It's wholesome, it's good. But it's not absolute reality either. So when the parents can come to the stage that Bhaktivinoda Thakur came to, then the affinity for his son goes beyond just the affinity of parents for children. And then you can give the best to your children, and not only to your children, to whoever. But it's part of the parents' responsibility, having invited a soul to become a member of the family, to do focus attention there, and in expanded circles outwards to others, without neglecting. Then it's love, not just attachment. What you got in your mouth there?
Sometimes he pretends to be a cat
when
he's flexible.
Oh,
a cat.
He's a cat.
Okay. So he's a cat when he's flexible.
Okay. Anything else? Yes.
I have a really formal question, so you can do it. So kind of follow up to what Mataji was asking, the response to Mataji's question about seeing the cause in all expansions. The way I understood that was, as we continue to perform devotional service and improve our relationship with Krishna, the part of self-realization and God-realization includes being able to see the cause in all expansions. Is that a correct understanding?
My attention was a little distracted. Could you try it again?
Sure.
Because he's going out the door right now.
Part of self-realization and God-realization.
Yeah.
As we continue to perform devotional service to Krishna and we improve our relationship with Krishna, is being able to see the cause in all its expansions.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Yeah. It directly follows the discussion we just had about relationships with jivas that are divine and not based upon attachments, or love and not based upon mundane affinity or worldly affinity. It's a very advanced stage, but then, according to our attachment to Krishna, then we can have attachment to those in relation to Krishna only.
So
And similarly, as with relationships, seeing the cause within all effects, within nature and within his opulences and within his expansions and within living entities. That's a very advanced stage that comes from attachment to Krishna.
Sort of corollary to that is the focus is still in improving the relationship to Krishna while this manifests itself as part of your self-realization and God-realization.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Last question.
Continuing on the topic of the cause.
So okay, we got a roll here.
Earlier you were mentioning that the candle power is past the candle power.
The flame.
The flame, yeah. And the cause as well. So does that mean that we clearly understand that Krishna is the original cause?
Yeah.
And also does that mean that the purpose of the advent of the Lord or expansion of the Lord is to extend, compassion, loving relationship, mercy, all that also, that the cause is the same cause they expand? Can also say that?
I'm not sure what you're asking. Let's just go back to the first part. Krishna is within everything. And so your question is, can we expand that to say that as the purpose of Krishna's advent is his compassion, can we say that within all the features of creation and all the persons and everything, the aspect of compassion is also there?
No, I was specifically referring to the Kalas and the Swamishas. Expansions.
Do they do so because of compassion? Is that your question?
And a loving relationship with the living entities. For example, nourishing the Dev.
Well, yeah, they're fulfilling Govinda's compassion. I mean, they're not non-entities, they're the Lord. But they're fulfilling, they have that mood of service towards him. And that he has this desire, so like they have that desire. It's not like a borrowed desire, it's their desire. But it's the fulfillment of his compassion, sure. The whole of creation has that as its initial impetus, the Lord's ichha, his desire. And then all the things that happen is following that desire, including the forms of the Lord that descend. And what to speak of, the compassion that one experiences in the spiritual world, where it's not like, okay, now all the conflicts are gone, see you later. The compassion is now enriched and strengthened, the intimacy of loving dealings. But the intimacy of loving dealings is not like what we know here, where it's, entrepreneurial. You do something for me, I do something for you, so we have a nice loving relationship. It's the intimacy of love in its unadulterated sense. It's amplified or intensified. Like, the wattage is greater. There's a 40 watt bulb, a 60 watt bulb, a 100 watt bulb, a 150 watt bulb, a 250 watt bulb. So it's the connection is even stronger. The sense of love and compassion in exchange between the living beings and the personality of God, it intensifies and intensifies. Intensifies.
So you're saying not just the expansions, but all of our purpose of creation is
sure.
To serve Krishna.
We can misuse it,
but
that's the intention. So it's within everything that intention is there. Even the misfortune is to help us come to him. It's not a suitable place to be. that Krishna is cruel. Vengeful, wrathful God, you turned away, I'm going to slap you. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai. Gaurav Shri Prabhupada Swami Maharaj.